everyone, and welcome to the Jewel Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this summer, I'm bringing you all the news and interviews for everything to do with basketball in WA. In this week's episode, we have our next instalment of Trevor Time with former Perth Wildcats coach Trevor Gleeson, and we'll hear from dynamic Perth Lynx import Airy McDonald, who may have the most epic marriage proposal story you'll hear this year. But first, last time Trevor Gleeson was in the studio, the Wildcats were in crisis and we were talking about ways for them to get back on track. Now they've won 3 games in a row and are back on track. And the NBL is starting to take shape and there's been a big change with the league today. So what time is it? It's Trevor time.
You got to plan for it. It's going to happen at some stage. We used to have a term that we had war games. Leaders have to lead. When crisis hit, leaders have to lead. We had a play for 8 years we never got to use in the game. My job is to get the ball to Bryce Cotton right here, right now.
Trevor Gleeson, welcome back to the Dribble Podcast.
It's good to be back.
I reckon you're feeling a little bit uncomfortable at the moment, aren't you?
Probably a little bit of a hot seat.
So it is exactly 1 p.m. on Tuesday. That's Western Standard Time, 4 p.m. over in the East, which is about 5 hours since we learned that Illawarra Hawks had parted company with Jacob Jacomas as their head coach. Your name's buzzing around everywhere. Have you been contacted?
Well, yeah, just recently Matt Campbell just called and wanted to know what's my whereabouts, what I'm doing. So I think, you know, Wollongong probably do their due diligence, see what they want to do for the future. And obviously that a lot of water go under the bridge and go from there.
So can you, is this something you would be interested in, or do they have to give you more information at the moment?
Well, I don't think anything's changed on my part. I said that I want to coach again in the NBL. So, and the same, I believe I said, I got to wait for the right situation. So if that's the right situation, I don't know. It's way too early to speculate on that. Ben, you know, I've had overseas offers on the table, so I just have to work out what's best for myself and the family.
Is it difficult? Like, it's different when there's no job available. When there is a job available, suddenly it becomes real in Australia.
Yeah, look, I don't like speculating about that. When someone has a job, it's, you know, it's the same with JR. He's let him coach. You know, the same with Brian with the Boomers. Let him coach. And if this things happen, obviously things change down the path. But you know, as a coach, you never want someone looking over your shoulder ready to jump on board. You know, I want to sit back, and I've just had this time, 21 years of coaching in a row, just to sit back and enjoy. And I'm actually enjoying the media, probably not today, but I'm enjoying that part of it.
So for them, now it's very early. You need to get more information and you go through a process and see if it piques your interest.
Yeah, well, you have to do your due diligence, you know, both, and we might not align. So when you go through an interview process, you want the values and behaviours, and if you align, and that's what happened when I came over here with Perth and Jack and the board, everything kind of aligned and it was similar beliefs, and then we moved ahead. But I've also been to other interviews that they haven't been aligned. So I just take a step back and said, no, this is not right for me. So there's way too much speculation. Everybody wants to be first and everyone's wrong. You know, it's Matt Campbell just called up, said, what are you doing? I said, I'm enjoying summer at the beach, enjoy being dad, taking the kids to school and making them breakfast. That's about as far as the conversation went.
Well, it's an interesting time for you coming up. Your phone will be on a flat battery for, I reckon, for the next 10 days or so as everyone rings you and texts you and tries to work out what's going on. So when we spoke yesterday to talk about what we talked about today, this certainly wasn't on the agenda. We were talking about the NBL ladder and how there's a clear gap now in the pecking order. The bottom three are struggling, obviously. Illawarra on the bottom of that. We've got bottom three teams at 2-7, 2-6, 3-7. Top six teams make the play-in tournament. Does it feel like we're already down to seven teams this season?
Yeah, probably you're 10 games in, so you're a third of the season, just over a third of the season. And it's getting pretty clear how it's going to balance out. I think Melbourne United have been the outstanding team so far. Tassie have probably had a hard travel back with it. They probably got another couple of wins out of there, but it's starting to settle down. And then you see Sydney are starting to, they've got about three spokes in the wheel working at the moment. Wait till they get the whole 10 of them working. They're going to be interesting to see how they develop and grow. But I don't know if I can see anything else reaching up into that top six.
So we're at a really interesting time for the league then, because the NBL is constantly talking about expansion, and yet we're not even a third of the way really through, just on a third of the way through the season, and there's already the ladder looking like it's pretty much locked away. So the league was in Darwin last week talking to the Northern Territory government. How do you look at expansion? Is there enough talent in this country now that we're taking players to other countries playing elsewhere to maximise what we have here and still expand, do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You're getting so many pathways now for the kids to come through and take that step to the NBA, which is great for the Australian basketball brand. But what you don't want to do is dilute the product. You know, I remember when I first came over here, I think it was 12 teams, and then the 13 years, Gold Coast came in the following year. So there was 13 teams in. So you probably get the top five or six and each team is good, and then it kind of dwindles away. But I honestly believe the league is good enough to get to 12 teams, you know, especially with three imports. I wasn't a fan of 12 players on the roster just because it's a 40-minute game. You don't get enough court time. But I believe that the perfect alignment for Australia would be around the 12 teams. So we're at 10 at the moment. So, you know, you look at the next 10 years, try to add one or two.
So when you look at it, we had, the comp went back to eight teams. Southeast Melbourne came in for the 1920 season, then Tassie 21-22. What do you think is realistic? You said 10 years to get to 12. Are we 1 or 2 years away from a Darwin or a Canberra or someone like that to come in and then five more years beyond that? Or do you think it can be a different sort of a timeline?
Well, you have a look at Tassie. What, you know, Scott Roth has been able to do that program in 3 years. So we'll get to the final, grand final and finals last year. It's been unbelievable, you know. And just the infrastructure and the work behind the scenes must have been able to do that to create like they've been here for a long time, but you know, they're only three seasons old. So you're probably looking at a couple of years before another team. You know, back in our day, well, when I started, we had Singapore. I don't think that's a great option for it. We're looking to probably having an Asia League at some stage down the track, if I'm looking ahead, but certainly not in the NBL.
So it's interesting, Darwin's been raised, Gold Coast has been raised. Both have never really had any success from a sporting franchise perspective in Australia. Gold Coast is known as the place where sporting teams go to die, and Darwin's had a lot of teams go up there and play as one-off games. Canberra's had an opportunity in the past, and people talk about Perth, and we saw the throwdown and how successful that is and the rivalries. Could you see a team here, or do you think there would need to be another team in one of those new areas?
Yeah, I grew up in Victoria and seeing the Melbourne when they had four teams. You know, it was Melbourne Tigers, Natterwadding, St Kilda, and even Geelong Supercats were down there. So there was St Kilda, they had a lot of teams in the basketball there. It was just great rivalry. You know, the inner city was just great rivalry. And you can see here with the Derby, the great rivalry in the AFL it has. So if the population, but then again, Sydney wasn't. You know, Sydney had the Razorbacks in there and it wasn't, yeah, it was a rivalry, but it really didn't take off. But the Melbourne has a rich history of building that up, and they've done a great job of advertising as a throwdown. I would love to see that happen one day in Perth, but I think that's, you know, we're talking when I'm retired in a rocking chair if that happens.
It would be hard, wouldn't it, to convince Wildcats fans or basketball fans here who are even just casual to not support what has been dominant for so many years over here.
Oh, it's a rich history. It's one of the richest histories in the NBL, you know, when they first started and till, you know, the Cal Bruton era of Ricky Grace era and Vlahov. And, you know, it's just a rich, rich history. And to come in cold and versus that, you're going to... There's a fair bit of passion out there still for the Wildcats.
Yeah, you know you're alive if you're certainly trying to do that. So one of the things we're going to talk about today is roles and rules or philosophies and team elements there, because that was something that you were so good at. And we've seen the Wildcats this year have turned around a lot on the basis of guys coming in and playing their role and doing the important things. So when you set up a coaching philosophy or a game, how do you structure? What's the key pillars that you need to have in place every single time that you just know this will get us going?
Well, you want to highlight your most important part you want to highlight. So if I use Perth is for the example, it's Bryce. Bryce was our, and then you want to put supporting cast around it. It's before Bryce, his Damo was the best defensive player, so we wanted someone to match Damo, and then we got Casey Prather that could put some pressure in the backcourt and we can create havoc in the backcourt. So you want pieces that complement each other and to have the opportunity to grow. And that's, I think, it's a part of developing as a team, as a season. You certainly don't want to start the season as the best and finish average. You want to start average and finish the best. It's a part of growth, development, and roles and responsibilities are a key part of that.
So in Utah in 2018, I was fortunate enough to be on that tour with you guys to America, and you let me sit in on the coaching meeting after.
Do I regret it now?
Oh, I'm about to play some audio from it. But it was fascinating to sit through. So you were highlighting an area of the game that you wanted to talk about. It had broken down. And one of the players said, well, if it breaks down, can't we just improvise and try to figure it out? And this was your response at the time.
What we've got to do, we've got to do it. Okay, and if you guys do it perfectly and they still score, that's on me. That's on our coaching staff. But we can't be decisive. I'll just make up my own rules. Goodbye, season. Let's stand for something.
So you had a lot of new players in that team, and they were a bit confused because it was the first time they played together, and they were like, well, we're still working our way out. And you were like, no, let's just do what we say. Focus on this and we'll be okay. Don't start everyone trying to go off on your own tangent.
Yeah, well, that's a part of building a team and working as a team together. Okay, obviously there was some, a team philosophy that we had to follow and had been successful. And when you get new personnel coming in, they're trying to do what they know. And it's, that doesn't fit here. This is what we need you to do so we can build the trust, build the reliability and build our backbone out of that. And, you know, some players, even if they don't shoot the ball, can be selfish. You know, if the ball gets swung to you and you don't shoot it and it comes out of the offense, I'll be going mad. You know, that's the shot that the team's developed. You're going to take responsibility in shooting it. Now, if you can't shoot it, you got to come and sit next to me. I got no problem with that because the team always comes first in those dynamics.
So that exact same meeting, you highlighted a specific passage of play. I think it was around near the elbow where someone had it and they didn't shoot. And you said, we need that player to shoot. And if you do not shoot, we need that player to drive to the basket. If you don't drive to the basket in this position, when this play looks like this, I'm bringing you to the bench. And the next game, Mitch Norton had the ball, didn't drive to the basket. And obviously they got off. I know what Trev's going to be saying. He's going to bench him. And you did. It was 11 seconds later you benched him. He comes back on 10 minutes later. First time he gets the ball, drives to the basket from that exact same spot because he knew he had clarity. How important is that to everyone know you must do this now because everyone else is expecting you to do it and they'll reposition themselves afterwards.
And that's part of playing as a team and growing as a team. You've got to know when the opportunity, when the team needs you to do it. And that situation, obviously, Mitch didn't know what he was responsible for. So I had to tell him, that's your opportunity right now. And I remember Clint coming in first up, and he couldn't really find his shots in our offense. He didn't know what to do. And I said, mate, you're working too hard and you're thinking too much. You just got to hit these spots. And then he started to realize, oh, I hit these spots. And then he was getting open and dropping three. So it's how the individual fits into the team and to make them aware of what is expected from a team-wise.
So you mentioned Clint. That's Clint Stein. That's 2017-18 you're referring to there. He was shooting at 26%. It's 26% in 17-18. Then his start to 18-19 was poor, and he was shooting at about 10%. Mm. There was a training session where he drove to the basket instead of taking a three, and you stopped the session, and you said, your job is to shoot threes. I'm backing you to shoot threes. If you don't shoot threes, then you may as well be sitting on the bench. The next week, he went 5 from 5 from three-point land. And he went 47% from the perimeter for the rest of the season.
Good.
All based on, I reckon, that conversation where the doubt disappeared from his mind of, I'm shooting poorly, what does coach want me to do? You said, stick to your strengths. Is that what you always preach to players?
Without a question. Stick to your strength. He is a great three-point shooter. So why would you all of a sudden say, I've got to get a new set of skills which aren't as efficient and aren't as the elite level as your shooting ability just because you missed a couple? And it's the same. A great example the other day was Bryce. You know, Bryce is down on confidence. All he had to do was start working a little bit harder off the ball than the teammates finding him. And once he do it, it's just muscle memory. You know, you got to keep what's important. What is your strength? What is your strength you're bringing to the team? And that's your role. And if you can do that to the best of your ability, we're going to have a shot at winning this. If we lose and you go your best of your ability, oh, okay, we walk off the court, we gave everything that we had.
How happy are you to see Jesse Wagstaff doing everything that he's done for 15 years now and the whole world going, that basic stuff that he does just works and makes a team better?
And I don't know if it got played out in the media at all, but who got the offensive rebound at the end of the game for Usher to hit three? Bryce shot the ball. The offensive went down, and who got it?
Jesse.
Jesse Wagstaff got it because he can read it, can see where the ball is and got there first. The bounce, he picked it up, threw it back in, and bang, and Usher hits the three. Those little things, you know, are just priceless. He sets a great screen. He makes the extra pass. His ability to read out on the floor hasn't changed at all. He's probably got slower a little bit with age comes at, but his basketball IQ and nowhere to be on the court is still where it was when he was at the peak of his game.
You'd love Hyrum Harris, wouldn't you? After seeing him offensive rebound and just dive on the floor and get in the way of people and do everything that he can possibly do to help a team.
And the red arm, you get right behind it. It's great. It's infectious. And everybody, you know, Greg Hyer did that for a number of years for us, just playing that role off the bench, high energy guy. And when it's got going, you can bring, it's a unique ability to bring your teammate along with you. You know, there's only a few players that can do it regularly. Bryce is one, Damo is another. Just being infectious of how they play out there. Greg Hyer was another guy. He has that ability. Now it's up to him if he can do it consistently over a number of years.
So there you have it. That's how you put together a team, and that's how you put together a business as well. And if Trev remains available for everyone other than getting involved in coaching again, you can, as a corporate speaking gig, if you want Trev to come and help you out with that, you can go to trevorgleeson.com and he will be, he would hope he's available. You would hope he's available. I'm not sure what I'm saying anymore because you might be available. You may not. Hopefully we have you still here on the Dribble podcast for a long time to come, but we may not. Who knows what happens will happen in the next couple of weeks. Good luck with everything. We appreciate you being open with what's happened today. We know that it's a difficult time to sort of discuss things. So good luck, and with whatever comes in the next couple of weeks, will come.
Well, hopefully I'm back here in 2 weeks.
Thank you very much. Well, Perth Lynx moved to 2-0 with an impressive 92-85 win over Adelaide Lightning on Saturday night. And one woman who was absolutely lightning was Perth's import, Airy McDonald. She ran amok with 29 points, 11 assists and 5 steals in a truly dominating performance.
Through the lane, McDonald stops on a time, banks it in, and the foul!
McDonald in a foot race with Panusa, she wins out and gets the bucket to go!
McDonald, A-back with an A-grade finish.
Yes, it certainly was an A-grade performance from Airy McDonald. She's made the A-grade effort to come into the studio today. Airy, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Now, it was an amazing final quarter, 17 points from you. And 4 assists. I can't recall anyone scoring the entire team's score through assists and points by themselves in a long time. You're amazing how you played that game. Take us through how you approached that last quarter.
I know I came out at the end of the third quarter and I'm looking and we were down. I don't remember how many points we were down, but I knew that I was getting back in the fourth quarter and I'm like, okay, 10 more minutes, so I got to make an impact and, you know, got to will us to a win.
You're a fan of the big moments, aren't you? You like having the ball in your hand.
You could say that. You could say that.
So how do you approach those moments? And from a mental point of view, you looked after everyone else for the start of the game in terms of making sure everyone else scored, and then you were like, right, I'm happy to take this on my shoulders.
I just approach it by just always staying calm and just no matter what, just always being a leader for my team, just being vocal, making sure I'm putting them in spots. But I think, just trying to grow. I'm trying to grow my game out here and just obviously become a great teammate and just, you know, learn when to get my teammates involved and just knowing like, okay, like you have to take over, like you guys have to win. So I think it's, you know, Saturday you really saw the will like of me wanting to win and also my teammates, like, you know, and I've noticed the past two games, like, you know, when we're down, like we're in deficits, like we have that fight to win. And I mean, I love that about this group that I'm playing with.
So your confidence and desire to have the ball in your hands is so amazing. And I'm going to take you back to, this isn't a highlight for you, but it's an important moment for you. So it's the NCAA championship game. You're down 49-41 with 6 minutes left and you score 9 of the team's 12 points for the rest of the match. And you missed a free throw and you missed the final shot of the game and you lose by 1 point. It could have been a moment which changes the trajectory of your career. And then you decide to go on the Players Tribune website on draft day and pen what I've got in my hand is part of what you penned for as an open letter to WNBA GMs on draft day. I'm going to hand this over to you at the moment. I want you to read part one of this to people as to what you wrote to more than a million people to read on draft day as a letter to WNBA GMs.
Yeah, I missed. But it's not about that to me. It's not about what happened in those final seconds. It's about who I was in those final seconds. It's about who I am. I'm someone who's built for the moment. Make or miss, win or lose, I'm built for it. I'm just a resilient person. I've always been able to take the heat from my failures. And that's the player I was all tournament, but especially at the end against Stanford. No hesitation, no fear. I wanted the smoke. Whatever that trait is, I have it, I embrace it, and I'll never lose it.
That's bold. That's a bold thing to write. On draft day, like to remind the world of that moment, which was only 10 days earlier, like what went through your head to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this bold statement out here and let the world know, I don't care that that happened. I want you to think of everything else.
I just wanted the world to know, like, okay, I'm here. Like, no one has known my name or just recognized my game. And just, I was like, okay, the way I performed in that tournament, I want people to, you know, remember me. And I think I did. I think I did that. And, you know, on draft day, I'm like, okay, I need to leave one last impression on the GMs, the coaches. And I want them to know that they're getting a stellar player. They're getting someone who's not afraid of the big moment, someone who's got that chip on their shoulder and who will do anything for the team.
Speaking of bold, let's go to the finisher. Let's read part two of how you finish this letter.
Y'all can keep talking about my height or my size or whatever you think is going to stop me. Y'all can keep underrating me and those mock drafts. I'm going to be focused on helping a WNBA team compete for a championship. And I'm going to keep on grinding until you become a believer. Bet on that. See you at the draft.
That's gold. That's absolutely gold. And then you got pick three in the draft. And the majority of the top 10 from that season are gone. Like, they're not even in the system anymore. Talk about your height. You're 168 centimetres. So you're not big. You're lightning quick. Like, you had the belief that your skill set would work no matter what doubters believed, didn't you?
I did. I mean, I think that I've always had that chip on my shoulder throughout my career. Like, I was always the smallest. So, I mean, I feel like I had to bring something that other players didn't have, my speed or just, like, my confidence and that dog and that grit. So I feel like I have to have traits that other people are willing to do. So, I mean, and now, just now in the WNBA now, like, I have to do things that other people don't want to do, whether that's playing defense, talking, you know, doing the dirty work. Like, I would do whatever it needs to take to win and also to stay on the team.
So did you have fears going into that draft that people weren't going to pick you at all? Because you're a top 10 pick, like top 5 pick. Like, what were you thinking going in when you wrote that? Did you think, I need this? Or was that just a message to make sure that once you got into the system that they'd still back you?
I feel like I didn't meet the letter at all, but that was just something that I wanted the GMs to know. Like, okay, you pick me, you don't, but I feel like you're missing out. But if you do, you're getting a stellar player, a great human being besides basketball. So, I mean, I didn't have any doubt or fear that I wouldn't get picked. I feel like, you know, I'm a religious person, so I mean, I feel like, you know, I pray for this. I worked for this. So, I mean, I'm like, there's no way that I wouldn't get picked in this draft or even stay on the team.
Athletically, were you a track athlete with your speed? Like, where does that part of your game come from?
I did run track in elementary and middle school, but, you know, I'm from California, so it gets too hot, so I, like, quit.
were you competitive in a track meet from a sprinting perspective, or was that a basketball speed over that sort of distance rather than the hundreds and 200s? And
oh, I was competitive in track. If I lose, I would cry. But, you know, I feel like, you know, me running track in my younger days, that helped me with my speed for the basketball court.
Take me to the driveway that you've mentioned in some of your interviews in the past. There's the driveway at home in the big family. Competitive? That's competitive.
So, you know, he brought up the infamous driveway games. Just, you know, coming up, like, my whole family played basketball. Like, we're basketball fanatics, you know. Everyone coached or played in my family. And so I just remember, like, you know, being young and watching my mom even in there battling my grandparents. Like, it was crazy, like, just watching them play. And, you know, as I got older, you know, I got to, you know, put myself in those situations. And it was competitive, especially in my household. If you lose, oh, those 20 push-ups for you.
Really?
20 push-ups automatically for a loss.
So was it one-on-one or was it three-on-one? Oh, you got a big family.
Oh, it was five-on-five.
Five-on-five.
Rotate, subs, or even, you know, feeling a little confident. I go against my older brother. I lose. That's 20 push-ups.
So how big's this family?
Ooh, it's my immediate family is probably like maybe 40 of us. It's a lot of us.
And how talented was everyone else in terms of where they ended up?
My older brother played basketball. He started off at Memphis, played under John Calipari for a year. Then he transferred to UNLV and played under Lon Kruger, and he finished out his career there. My older cousin played at Jackson State in San Bernardino. And then I have some cousins who played JUCO.
So they would be genuine games and in the driveway. People would want to turn up and pay some money to watch those games.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So how big are we talking? How big is this driveway? Is it a miniature sort of area like most people's driveways, or does it go for a fair bit of space?
My grandparents had kind of a big driveway, so it kind of had a loop. So, I mean, we were able to, you know, maneuver.
And what was your go-to move there? You know, when you get into the rim, what were you doing? You're one of the younger ones, aren't you?
I'm the youngest. One of the youngest grandkids and siblings or children. But, you know, I was always small, so it depended on who defended me at the time. So, I mean, if I had my mom on me, okay, I'm sizing her up. Okay, I'm going to use my speed to go around her. If it was like my dad or my brother, I'm going to try to hit him with a jab step and try to get a shot off or something to get him bite, because I was just always small.
How do you find... You're over here now, and you're obviously a long way from home playing in WNBA. You're a long way from home when you're playing in college basketball as well. That's a tight family when we've got what you've just spoken about there. How do you find not being near them as much?
It's hard because, you know, I'm very close to my family. You know, I talk to them every day. But what a lot of people don't realize that I went away for school at 14. I went to a private school or public school first in Fresno, where I'm from. Then I transferred to a private school in Stockton, which is about maybe an hour and 45 away from Fresno. And so I feel like transferring schools, you know, for basketball to get me where I am now, I feel like that, you know, helped me mature.
And from an international basketball perspective, away from the WNBA, you went to Hungary for a couple of weeks. And then what happened there? Did you just not enjoy it there? Did you want to get back home? Talk us through that scenario.
I went through like a little rough patch, I think part of it was, you know, burnout. So I came straight from college, then I went to the draft, then it was a training camp, then I didn't have a great rookie season. You know, I took some DMPs, and that's hard, you know, coming from a tournament and having a great senior year. And so, you know, I got to Hungary, and it was also still COVID, and I was just, you know, in a foreign country. I knew the culture was going to be different, but when I got there, you know, it was just hard not having anyone there that, you know, was the same as me speaking my language. So it was kind of hard to navigate my whole first year. So, I mean, I felt like, you know, I can't perform if I'm not happy. And so I made a decision to come home.
And you got a very strong recommendation to come to Perth. And we were told, I speak your language. There's beaches everywhere. The weather's amazing. Like, who was the person who said, come to Perth?
The infamous Marina Mabry.
So how do you know Marina? Great player for the league. She was fantastic when she was over here. Take us through that relationship.
So Marina and I share the same agents, and also we play against each other in the WNBA.
And what was her recommendation?
She was just like, you know, if you go to Perth, you know, it's great, it's beaches. And she's like, you're from California, so, you know, you can relate to the weather, just the beaches. And she was just talking about the team aspect, talking about Ryan and how he's a great coach. And he just, you know, he builds his players up, he guides them, and he trusts them. So, I mean, after she said those two things, I'm like, okay, say no more. I'm sold.
Well, Lynx fans should be very thankful to Marina because, as I said, she was brilliant when she was over here, so fun to watch. And now they've brought you over, who is so fun to watch. And you're here with your husband at the moment. You two, I saw you at the Wildcats game the other week. I saw him at your game the other day. You were a Wildcat in Arizona yourself. He was a footballer.
Yes.
How good was he as a footballer?
he was all right. You know, I'm not going to pump his head up. You know, he does me the same way. So, you know, he was all right.
He was still right. Who would win a running race between the two of you? Because we know you're quick. In American football, we have to be quick. Do you ever take each other on?
You know, I'm going with my confident self. Me, I'll win.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't let him tell you this, but he swear he can beat me in basketball. Like, and I'm like, dude, stay in your lane. Like, you're a football player. Like, leave it to me.
Well, we talked about bold before. And the letter that you read out before was extremely bold, but I've got to give it to him. He is one of the boldest humans going around. I'm going to take you to some audio. So this is March 7, 2020. It's 4 days before the NBA shuts down due to COVID. There's 7,600 people in Las Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament. You walk off court after scoring 35 points in a semifinal loss. There's video cameras going on. There's a marching band. There's live on TV, and your godfather is streaming. And we're going to play some of that stream right now.
So here's what's going to happen. Aries, Woodford is about to propose to Aries. Back in the very minute, everyone has an inside. So here he is. He's stepping out. He's got the runs. He's about to do it.
No pressure. No pressure here. Like, take me, like, when you looked over and you see Arian, will you marry me? The band's going nuts. The crowd is chanting your name and you see him down on one knee. What was that like?
It was very unexpected. The crazy thing is, like, when he asked me to marry him, I directly looked at my parents who were, like, sitting a row above him. I was like, are you guys approving this? So he looked at me. He's like, what the heck? But, you know, I ended up saying yeah. And obviously I saw my parents holding up a sign smiling. And I was like, okay, they're okay with it. So I said yeah.
could you believe it was like, you're walking off court probably devastated that you lost the game, and suddenly this big moment's happening.
Oh yeah, I was so mad after losing, and everyone knows how I take losses. So I saw my family and I heard them calling my name, and I wasn't even gonna look over there, but I happened to glance and I see some big like signs. And I'm like, I looked and I'm like, whoa, and I was like, wow. And I looked at him, and the crazy thing is, when I look back, three of my best friends on my team knew the whole time, like they planned it, and I'm like, wow.
The world could have ended up very different, because if he had decided to wait a couple of days, COVID happens and it's all shut down, he wouldn't have had the stadium.
Right.
And it took some amazing planning for him, didn't it?
It did.
And then you end up flashing the ring on TV. You know, as I said, TV's involved as well. You sit down on the actual broadcast.
After losing.
To talk about the fact you've just been proposed to on national TV.
That was crazy. But, I mean, I'm glad that he did it in a way, because I'm more like a private person. And so, I mean, that was the only way, you know, getting my whole family there is obviously like involved basketball. And so I got a lot of, you know, special people to be there. Obviously my old teammate Kelsey Plum was there. She interviewed me after. So, I mean, it was crazy.
When did the actual wedding take place, given that the whole world shut down for a fair amount of time afterwards?
Oh my goodness. Oh, we didn't even have a real wedding. We eloped before I went to Hungary.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because you had no choice?
You know, we kind of had to make some adult decisions. You know, me, I wanted like a huge wedding. I was like 500 guests. And he was like, that's not realistic. And so I was like, huh, all right. And so we got eloped and we saved up money. And we bought our first house last year in Atlanta. So, I mean, I feel like that was the right choice in the end.
And just traveling around the world, playing basketball, seeing different locations, does that feel like a honeymoon in a way?
Yeah, definitely a honeymoon.
How are you finding Australia? As we said, weather's great, beaches are nice, this city's easy to get around, but that's for us who are living here all the time. How are you finding it, driving on the wrong side of the road, understanding people like me who speak really fast? How are you settling in?
I'm settling fine. I'm not going to lie to you. The first couple weeks were a little rough for me. I was hugging the left side of the road, very nervous. I didn't want to get on the freeway, but now I'm adjusting. We love it here. We feel like we're like in San Diego. So, I mean, it's paradise, honestly.
So the Lynx asked me to come and speak to the group about media at the start of the season. And I said to them, if there's anything that for the imports you don't understand, put your hand up. And the phrase that I didn't think would get me into trouble was taking the piss. And suddenly your hand goes up, Emily Potter's hand goes up, and the whole room looks at you as if to say, is this just an Australian thing? Is there any other Australian elements that you've had to look at people and go, I have no idea what you're talking about?
It's a lot of them that I can't even remember. I just look at them and I kind of like nod my head. Like, I'm like, okay. Like, kind of laugh it off. But, you know, I guess I'm kind of learning you guys' lingo a bit.
Yeah, we are different, it's fair to say. But the basketball isn't different, is it? It's the same sport wherever you go. That's the great thing about playing your sport. You can go all around the world and play it at the elite level.
Yeah, I love it. And icing on the cake, I'm building bonds and, you know, making friends.
So you got Bendigo on Friday night at the Bendat Basketball Centre. You're hoping to go 3-0. It's really important to build this platform a bit further, isn't it now?
It is. I think that we can do some big things in this season. I'm excited for, you know, our trajectory and where we're headed. And, you know, I love this group of girls.
Well, you can buy a 3-game membership if you are a Lynx fan. There are still 9 home games left. It is $75 for adults, $30 for kids. Great value. You can come and see a superstar like Erin McDonald. She is doing some amazing things at the moment. You will not believe her speed. You will not believe her talent. She's someone you have to see in person. And I'm really glad that you've come in here in person today. So thank you very much for joining us on the Dribble Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Remember, you can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian newspaper and at thewest.com.au. Thanks to our guests, Trevor Gleeson and Erin McDonald. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.